Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so excited today to bring you my friend and creative that I can't really put a title around, because Maria Glantz is an actor, director, playwright, grants woman, and now currently executive director of the Vashon Senior Center. So talk about living a creative life, because making all that work, living your dream, but having to figure out how you're going to do it is maybe one of the most creative things that we can do. So I am looking forward to learning from Maria, and thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy day.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Sally. It's lovely to see you.
Yeah, before you head over to the center. So this is my first question. I hope it's not a trick question, but if you're out and you're going to a party of just regular folks, and they want the really short form of who you are and what you do, you know, the kind of 25 seconds before they decide to get another olive or something like
sure.
that.
Sure.
How do you define yourself, or how do you present yourself?
I always say that I make theater. I've been a theater maker my entire life. I can't not do that. And for me, making theater is a conscious choice. I think it's a collaborative process, and everyone gets together and they make something together. And I also then say, and I run the senior center now. Or sometimes I say I'm the executive director, or I say I work at the senior center also quite frequently. Really just depends on how deeply I want to get into conversation.
Yeah, because I would imagine that, you know, if you said, hey, I was in, it's 1448,
yes.
the two-day marathon
yes.
of creativity and,
yes.
and directing and acting and all that good stuff, people would kind of go, oh, okay, that's cool. But if
yeah.
you say I'm at the Vashon Senior Center, they probably have an opinion.
You know, and you know what the opinions always are? Oh, I would never go there. I'm way too young.
I know.
I'm not a senior.
I'm just 70. You know?
I know. And it's so interesting, because part of like trying to change the narrative around that is 55 and up is what King County says is a senior in
yeah.
terms of
yeah.
ability to get services and all that. And we have members that are all ages, all over the map. Anyone can be a member of the senior center. Anyone can come to lunch. You know, we're all going to be seniors someday. It's not just really old, gray-haired people anymore.
Right, right. And I don't know what it takes to change that narrative, because there are folks who go to the senior center and they are in that place of being very handicapped and very old.
Yes. Or I would say, I don't know that I would say handicapped,
yeah.
but disabled, perhaps, or dealing with physical decline. You know, some live with cognitive decline.
Right.
So, yeah, we have all of those. And you know what? They are living vibrant lives still.
Absolutely. And there's something really rich about seeing yourself as part of a community
mm-hmm.
where you're not othering folks who are older.
Oh, God,
because,
yeah.
you know, I think a lot of us didn't go to the senior center at age 55 because they were the others.
Yes.
And we weren't them.
Yes.
And to go and say, no, there's this,
yes.
this category called other really doesn't exist. And our community gets better when we stop those divides.
Absolutely. I believe that heart and soul.
Yeah.
And you know, and I've also been a teaching artist in my life. So I've worked with pretty much all ages, although under four is challenging for me.
Yeah, that would be another level, I think. Another level. Right, right. Well, I recently, because I had hip surgery last year and I need to rehab and get going again. And then we had the pandemic and I got pretty lazy. So I'm in exercise classes over at the Fashion Athletic Club.
Yeah.
And I would never have gone to senior fitness.
Oh,
you know, because they don't call it that. But you know what it is. And you walk in. And at first it's like, And it's actually been quite wonderful. And I think it's parallel to what I feel at the senior center, that you go, oh gosh, we're in it together.
Absolutely.
We all have, if we might not use the word handicap, but we all have challenges that we're having to deal with. And some of them are visible and some of them aren't. And we all have them. And yahoo, that's who we are. Mm-hmm. You know, very, very human. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, having been with you over at the senior center, it's got a good vibe.
It does. I always say it's the nicest place on Vashon.
I think so too. It's super welcoming. You walk in and you are welcomed.
Yes.
And there are a lot of smiles and the staff seem to like each other.
We do. We do. We totally do. We are Team Senior Center.
Yeah.
You know, and I always tell people, I mean, work is work. There are times it's hard for everyone and challenging for everyone. But I am never unhappy when I walk through the door.
Ah.
I always perk up.
Yeah.
I'm always brightened, you know, and that's because of the people who are there.
Yeah.
And Kathleen at the front desk, obviously. Who could be a better
greeter? She's a jewel.
Isn't she? And everyone is. Everyone, we care about each other. We like each other. We like talking with each other. It's a great place to be.
I think that's everybody's contribution, but it's also happening on your watch.
Oh, thank
because,
you.
You know, that's how we want to work. That's how we want to have it feel. But sometimes the demands, the stresses, the financial exigencies and necessities and stuff make for a difficult atmosphere, and that gets to us. So, I think that, and you tell me if I'm right, but I think, like a theater director working with an ensemble, you believe in collaboration.
I do. 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people, our Catherine Shedd is our current caravan driver, and she's retiring at the end of the month.
Okay.
Because she wants to spend time with her beautiful new husband, Barney, who's in his 80s, and I think Catherine's in her 70s. But she has always said this has been her best job.
Aww.
I know. And her letter of resignation was, thank you for being my last best job. Sweet. And people say that, you know, different coworkers will say that. And for me, it's like I have been a worker my entire life. I've spent my entire life in nonprofits and education. And I never really thought about that until recently, like looking back. I mean, I'm 60 right now, and I have very few resources because I've always worked in nonprofits and theater. So, you know, the future is a fascinating place to contemplate sometimes for me personally.
And that's interesting to me because, well, this show is about living a creative life.
Yeah.
And it's nice when you have a endowment or a source of support or a way to live that allows
super
you to
nice.
Do super nice. And although sometimes people feel guilty about that, you know, but I think for a lot of creatives and particularly with folks that you've hung out with around theater and all, you have to be creative in order to put together the package called your life and make it work financially. And I think that requires some of our biggest creative thinking, although it's not always easy to accept that.
Not at all. And it's, you know, I have peers, friends who have lived even more creative lives than I have. And we do talk about that. We talk about there is a level of anxiety that always exists. It's a low hum. The only time I have not had it in my life was a brief window during the pandemic when I had just gotten divorced and we had sold our house. So I actually had resources for the first time. Like it wasn't a sweat, you know? And boy, oh boy, talk about freeing. that just was like walking around on a little bit of a cloud mm-hmm. for a while. So there is a constant, you know, brains and spirits and minds and hearts are kind of constantly in motion.
Right.
At
right.
some point, trying to figure out how to piece together a life. But I have to say, I feel incredibly fortunate to be where I am right now.
Yeah. Well, it was great that along the way you picked up these gifts and things like nonprofit management and grant writing.
Yes.
Because I think the grant writers of the world are always going to have business.
Oh, yeah. I've loved it. I love it. It's telling a story, uh-huh. you know? It's,
yeah.
It is figuring out how to tell the story of whatever this place is or this effort is or these humans are mm-hmm. and making it clear for people. Because, I mean, not to go to really upsetting places, but not even today. Our government has never been very supportive mm-hmm. of the creative underclass or any kind of underclass. It's not easy being poor in America. It's not easy being an artist in America. And so nonprofits have always filled that gap.
Right,
that's what
right.
we do. It's the closest to living my values I can get. And I never said that. Like, I never put a stake in the ground
right.
when I was young and said, I'm going to live my values. I just did the only things that I could do.
right. But you've just opened up a door for me that I think is super interesting about how little we really value artists.
Yeah.
And looking at that and saying, is that Western capitalism? Is that our particular culture or some mix of both? Because we have a celebrity culture.
Yes, we do.
We laud the folks who are at the very top who get to do the Super Bowl or, yeah. or whatever, and let others... It's almost derogatory.
Yes.
Because when you have an artist who is not a celebrity, and they're also poor.
Mm-hmm.
In our culture, that's a double whammy.
Absolutely. And we blame them.
We make them lesser.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been reading about art in the past, and I don't think it was always like that. I think in Paris.
Yes.
At the turn of the, you know, early 1900s, and even in New York mm-hmm. in the 1920s, people were poor. But they were idealistic, and they weren't denigrated.
No, And we've had, you know, administrations. Franklin Delano Roosevelt pulled us out of a depression with massive community public projects that involved a lot of artists, you know, and carpenters and laborers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So there have been times in our history when we have been much more supportive of the entire swath of humanity than we are now.
Right, because we don't see it. Like when he did the WPA
mm-hmm.
and he gave survival wages to artists.
Yes.
You know, he gave us Woody Guthrie.
Yes.
He gave us...
Yes, he did.
He gave us the New York art scene.
Yes.
Because abstract expressionism was dangling on a thin thread of extreme poverty.
Yes.
And people could sustain themselves, and what did we have? We became the art capital of the world.
Yes.
And so people don't sort of see that there are benefits, but they're not in the next quarter right in your face, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How have you wrestled with that narrative? Because to be able to be creative, in my mind, requires a certain, not necessarily optimism, but a certain positivity. But when mm-hmm. you see how the culture is treating artists,
mm-hmm.
and when you see how hard it is to just be able to contribute in ways that are important, how do you stay out of that negativity?
I don't know. That's a great question. My son and I talk about optimism. And I am an optimist, you know. I think I'm a realistic one. I'm a realist and an optimist. But in some ways, I think we come into the world with the natures that we have, and that's mine for better or worse.
How
it just
wonderful.
Is,
yeah.
You know, so I I certainly can get down, but I tend to look for solutions. And maybe that's creativity in action. You know, it's like, okay, here we are. Mm-hmm. Here we are. You know, one of my favorite shows in the entire world was is Umo's Fail Better. Beckett Moves Umo.
Yes.
I love that play. We all do. Piece, performance, whatever it is. And it begins with the words, here. Here we are. And that right there, that's an exciting kind of place to be. Because you're going to figure out, what am I going to do here and now with the resources I have, the people I have, the needs that are out there? What are we going to do?
That is such a great place. And as simple as it is, I don't think it's easy.
No, uh-uh.
Because when your brain is jangling with all the dangers and possibilities and headlines and clicks and all, you know, all this, to just be, okay, here we are, gang.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Is extremely hard.
It is. I think, you know, and I'm really grateful for theater for that. There's nothing like, I mean, that's the beauty of theater. It is immediate. It is in the moment, you know, and it's right now. You and I are talking to each other right now, and people are going to get to listen to this thanks to technology in the future, but we're never going to be right here, right now, with that light, wearing these clothes, in this body at this moment in time. And that is, it is super easy to just forget that. You know, and that's what I think a lot of meditation and spiritual practice and exercise and all those things. We're looking for ways to connect to the now.
Yes, we are. And it's interesting to also think of the arts and theater and other disciplines like that as, in a certain way, I mean, most people wouldn't call them spiritual practices, but I would.
Because
I think they require to move into that state of presence.
Mm-hmm.
In order to really go deeper and create.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's very spiritual. You know, I mean, I grew up very, very, very Catholic. I went to Catholic school 6 days a week from fourth grade to eighth grade. And I always say that was my first training in theater. There's nothing more theatrical than a Catholic mass. You know, it is. And it's the same show every time. But it is definitely a spiritual practice, and it is a performance piece.
Right.
It's all of that. So,
yeah, so interesting. I'm trying to, I don't know if the name Kathy Sallet means anything to you, but she is one of the improvisers. She's a star improviser. Mm. She's worked with this group that does Performing the World out of New York.
Mm.
And she's also taken improv into companies, corporate settings, organizations and stuff. And she is so clear that life is a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it as a performance opens up possibilities for people because they can take on roles, they can change the narrative, they can step into the scene. There are a whole lots of ways that this sort of performance orientation shifts us.
That's fascinating. I would like to learn more about her. I don't know.
There's a book that she wrote, and I can't remember it. I think it has performing in the title, but it was really about looking at your life as performance and considering what roles you wanted to play and how you wanted to show up.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't put that to use as much as I could, but I love the idea. And especially now where there are different choices for narratives out there and there are different performances that we might want to engage with.
Sure. Yeah.
And to be able to say, okay, what role do I want to play? What's my performance now? Because I think that thing that how did Beckett start? I'm here or
here? Here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. I think that's the beginning of a performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And also recognizing there's tremendous honesty in performance. You know, if especially in theater, if someone is being honest on stage, you're going to feel it. And if they're not, it's this weird blend of pretending and truth-telling, you know, but you got to be telling the truth or it's really not compelling at all.
Right. Yeah. How interesting. What a paradox that you have to access a kind of inner truth,
mm-hmm.
even though you're putting on a role.
Sure.
That isn't you.
Yeah.
And we all know that.
Yeah.
But still something has to ring.
Yeah. But we all do it all the time.
Yeah, we do.
I do it at work.
Uh-huh.
I have outfits that are my executive director outfits. You know, and I don't have to wear them very often on Vashon.
Yeah, yeah.
But every once in a while, you know, you gotta look like somebody who knows what they're doing. And I've also seen people who look like that and sound like that, and they are not the real deal.
Yeah.
And they can wreak a lot of havoc in the world. And I think we might be experiencing some of that right now. Yeah. I certainly have experienced it in my own past. Right. So it's really interesting because we do put on these roles and these guises. And sometimes they're legit and sometimes there's some danger lurking under there. So it's interesting.
I
didn't know why I went down that road, but it just struck me.
Because
my executive director outfit, that's what it was.
But also that sense that people have, I mean, I think we don't credit people enough for being able to hear and feel what's authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think that if we just do a facade of a leader,
yeah,
that does things and that look like they correspond to the role, mm-hmm. that they really are leaders.
Yeah.
But I think on some level people go, no, I get that. That is not true.
And sometimes we don't listen to ourselves.
Oh yeah.
That's always the hardest. That's always the hardest hurdle to get over, like, oh shoot.
Yeah.
Maria.
right. One of the things I think that's challenging with the arts, and I think doing one woman shows would be particularly mm-hmm. challenging, is to have a litmus test for success that's not necessarily the cultural one.
Uh-huh.
You know, like how much did you sell? How much money did it bring in?
Yeah.
You know, so because a lot of times, yeah, hopefully you'll sell out houses, and that will be a success, but it's not always in the monetary compensation. And so how do you measure success, especially with your artistic activities?
Oh, that's a great question. Connection comes to mind. Certainly if I am the one performing or sharing something, if I'm connecting with people,
mm-hmm.
Then that is a success. And success can look really, really different and interesting. I mean, I've had a couple of shows with See Me Naked, which was probably mm-hmm. the one I've toured the most, although that is a solo show with a drummer. I always have to say it's not me alone on stage.
Yeah.
There's a drummer. You know, I had a couple of shows in Canada with some very difficult audiences. And so that was fascinating to work with. And that show was built around a fair bit of improvisation in some ways. It's certainly in the ending. And so I changed the ending a handful of times
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't connecting with the audience.
Right.
But I would still say that was a really successful show
right.
because I navigated, that's what it is, navigating the circumstances in that moment. Given circumstances is an acting term from Sanford Meisner.
Uh-huh.
Who was the kind of spiritual follower of Stanislavski.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, what are the given circumstances of this moment and how are you going to navigate them? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got a script and you're obviously following that, but still the given circumstances may or may not be different. And in doing solo work where you're directly relating to the audience, in some ways it's easier because those given circumstances are quite there and quite now, and you have the ability to shift and change.
And it's your show.
Yeah. Totally. So I guess I define the right metaphor. How's that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Both in acting, being on stage, and in living life.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I am really in it, it just feels like everything is flowing like a river.
Mm-hmm.
And you're navigating the currents and really paying attention. That feels like success.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When you feel that connection with some force that's coming through you.
Sure.
And you feel like it's being received.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better.
No.
Than that.
And I would say that is true in many other areas, yeah, too. Basketball comes to mind always.
Yeah.
When you think about, like, somebody that a team playing basketball, whether it's in a lot or at the highest level, man, when they are listening to each other and just dealing with the swirls of energy that are going on,
right,
it's really similar, you know. So it's
sweet.
In sports, it's in all kinds of things.
Yeah. Did you have to raise money for your show?
Yeah, we did back in the old days a little bit.
Yeah. Because that's also the hard part, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, but there's always this disconnect about saying you're going to put your heart, your soul, your time, enormous effort into your performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the side, you have to raise money so you can do it at all.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's funny. I came up and I was just thinking about it the other night, maybe from an old friend on Facebook or something. I moved to Seattle in 1993. And man, theater was exciting.
Mm.
You know, I did a lot of garage theater and warehouse theater, and just it was a grungy version of "Let's put on a show, kids." You know, and it was beautiful. It was a great time to be an artist.
Yeah,
in a great place that one could afford to live.
Right. Well, that is the potential. These folks in New York who do Performing the World bring people,
mm-hmm,
or used to bring them, now it's more Zoomy, but from barrios in Brazil, from places in Africa where theater is changing lives.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very straight.
Yeah.
And often improvisational, but it speaks to the heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I find that just so exciting.
Yeah, totally.
That something is changing. So how did you... What was your journey into the Vashon Senior Center?
Oh, that's a great question. I, it was 2022, so we were still in the pandemic, but sort of coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I the pandemic in a lot of ways saved my life. I was in a particular space in my life where I was getting divorced, heading into being a single parent. Basically, kind of, sort of, and dealing with some real physical stuff, stenosis and all kinds of stuff. My body was basically full of inflammation and fighting it. So when I got laid off during the pandemic, that was a huge help. It was a huge boon because of the extra bump in pandemic unemployment,
mm-hmm,
and selling my house. So I had, you know, a year and a half maybe or so where I certainly worked. I wrote grants, but I didn't have to have a daily grind.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came time where, you know, I really needed a job. So I kind of put the word out, and it was actually a friend, Tina Shattuck, who runs Women Hold the Key.
Yes. our collective heroine. You know?
We're both beaming here in the studio.
Yeah.
God, she's wonderful.
Yeah,
she sent me a little note that the senior center was hiring a village manager for the village program.
Yeah.
And
tell people what the village program is.
Oh,
just in
it's
case.
The senior center outside the senior center.
Uh-huh.
It's every effort that's going on in the community to support elders living at home as long as they can, as independently as possible, and building community to make that happen.
Right.
There's a philosophy that everyone has something they can give to another,
mm-hmm,
and everyone will need something from another. And both of those things are beautiful things. Mm-hmm. It's okay to ask for help from your neighbor. And it's really good to look to your neighbors and say, do you need a hand? So that's philosophical.
No,
but
it's very real. And and in these times, probably even getting more
huge,
real, so.
Hugely important. So what the village does right now, it the Bluebird program, medical transportation to Rizeoff Island,
right,
part of the village, uh-huh, neighbors helping neighbors, yeah, check-in calls, chores.
Mm.
You know, the senior center really is this beautiful community center hub,
mm-hmm,
for seniors of all ages, mm-hmm, people of all ages. The village is what happens out in Vashon.
Right, right. So. But it's so critical. And for those, I'd say of us, who say, I love this island, this is my community,
yes,
I want to be here forever.
Yes.
But how is this going to work?
Yes.
We need safety nets.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. And it really is part of a much larger safety net. The senior center, I should say, is I'm so pleased to be a part of the Vashon Social Services Network. 9 nonprofit organizations on the island and a whole slew of community partners that are weaving that safety net.
That's
for
wonderful.
People of all ages, all abilities, all income levels on Vashon. Because we are not a municipality. We are unincorporated King County. We're a little bit of the Wild West. You know, and I love that about Vashon. That's why I like living here.
But it also means if we don't do it, nobody is going to do
exactly.
it for us. Yeah,
exactly.
So you were doing this job successfully with the villages, and then somehow the opening for ED came up?
Yes, the opening for ED came up, and it took me a very long time to even decide to apply, mm-hmm, at least 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they were so good about the search that they did. The board was very committed to finding and interviewing really good people. And it took me a long time to apply because, frankly, I have fled from the words executive director a lot of my life. Mm-hmm. I did not want that responsibility. I did not want a full-time 40-hour-a-week job. But what I realized in that 6 weeks, what I saw was a very healthy organization. It bubbled along inside daily life with, I think, not very many people even noticing that there was not an ED at the helm at that particular point in time.
Wow.
The staff just kept going. Programs kept going. People kept coming. You know, obviously people knew, but you didn't feel it, mm-hmm, in the center itself. And I saw the board at the time, many of whom are still on the board, leaning in so hard in ways I haven't witnessed before.
Mm-hmm.
One of our board members basically moved into the ED's office, taught herself how to use Excel so that she could make sure county grant invoices went in, you know, the reporting, all of that element. So I'm sitting there looking around at this really well-functioning place. And then I realized I didn't want it to change. So I didn't want a new boss.
Good point. Good
yeah,
point.
You know, it was like, whoa, I think I don't want someone else coming in right now. I think maybe I would like to do this. But I had a lot of trepidation.
Yeah, but I can imagine on the other side, you know, I'm sure there were great candidates, but someone would say, we know Maria, she delivers, we like her, she knows Vashon.
Yeah.
She can really, because it's hard to bring somebody onto Vashon.
Oh, it is.
And they think they get it, but
oh,
6 months later, they're out of sync with the community.
Oh, yeah. Vashon is a funny little place.
A funny little place.
You know, Kathleen and I talk about that a lot, because she's obviously been here decades,
yeah,
far longer than me. And I've only lived here for 12 years. But by virtue of the different places that I've worked and the different relationships I've made and friendships I've made, I've somehow gotten plugged in,
uh-huh,
to old Vashon,
yeah,
and weird Vashon and all these different little pockets of Vashon, including the underbelly, as
yeah,
we were talking about earlier, enough that I think I have an understanding of it, perhaps, or at least I know who to go and ask.
Yeah.
If something comes up.
Right.
I know people at the Eagles. I know people at Sporty's. You know, I know people in all the nonprofits. I know people in all the arts.
Sweet.
I know the UMOs. I know the old hippies. I know the not hippies. So,
weren't you connected to UMO before you moved over?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I came.
Yeah.
UMO brought me here.
How many years were you in their orbit?
Ooh, I started, the first time I worked with UMO was in 2004. I had just given birth. Elizabeth Klobe, the executive artist of UMO. Now, Elizabeth and I have known each other for 30 years.
Yeah.
She directed all my solo stuff in Seattle with Open Circle Theater at that point. Then she moved to Vashon, hooked up with UMO. And in 2004, they were planning a aerial production of Rapunzel. Esther Edelman was the artistic instigator. And it was their first really big aerial work. And UMO had always collectively created and continues to collectively create. But for this piece, Elizabeth brought me on as a writer. So I came and I did a process that actually Carol Churchill did with Monstrous Regiment, a women's theater company in England in the 70s, I think. I came to rehearsals and they worked. It was a 3-member cast. They improvised, they went through things, they did physical work, and I just sat and wrote. I transcribed, I wrote, scribbled. Then I went away and made a script.
Wow.
And brought it back. So that's the first time I worked with UMO, 2004.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, the UMO has certainly been a magnet for a lot of creative talent on the island.
Indeed.
Well, as we approach the end of our interview, tell me what you do when you need to recharge. Because I don't think, as positive as you are, being an executive director is hard work and sometimes super stressful.
Yeah.
So how does the artistic creative Maria find her balance when you're just tired and you need to shift?
You know, it's funny. I'm actually an introvert, which surprises people. I'm a gregarious introvert, let's put it that way. Or I land on the introvert line of introvert extrovert somehow. But I shut down. And for me, what that means is I read, usually something like a mystery, preferably set in England or Scotland. Like a genre I like.
Yeah.
And I go to my couch and I read. I might spend an entire day reading.
Sweet.
And I just, it's my vacation.
Nice.
It's a way to take a vacation in the span of 6 to 8 hours and not think about whatever I have to think about.
Right.
I go outside.
And you go outside. Yeah. Do you get to act much?
Yeah, I do. I mean, people ask. I did 2 beautiful shows last year with Drama Doc, As You Like It, which was a collaboration with Drama Doc and Andy James's program at the high school. Mm-hmm. So I was working with teenagers. There were, I think, 4 or 6 of us adult performers. And then I did The Hatmaker's Wife, which was a stunningly beautiful play. So when people ask, and it's something I am interested in, and I tend to not act for free anymore these days, unless it's something like 1448, which is just, you know, is what it is. It's madness.
Madness, but people seem to come out of it exhausted with big smiles on their faces.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty extraordinary, I have to say.
Yeah, the theater world's marathon.
Absolutely. It's like theater camp compressed into 48 hours. It's magic.
Sweet. Well, you know, talking to you, that possible gap between the world of the executive director, the nonprofit manager, grant writer, and the actor doesn't seem as big as I would think, because I can feel how being able to start from here and know you're working with an ensemble and that you have a role.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the role is to continue to direct and rally people around what's good.
Absolutely.
You know, and And I just have to say, this is just a plug. You know, I have seen you work at the senior center, and I've just seen smiles on people's faces. You know when somebody is coming in, and they're not coming in as boss, they're coming in as collaborator, community builder, finding out how you are. You know, there's like this good vibe that surrounds you there. So kudos, Maria.
Thank you, Sally.
Because it's not easy work.
No.
But it's so critical to our island right now, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much. It's a joyful place to be.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.